TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. This is the Hervoy Morit Show on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
We've made it to hour two here on Wonderful and Wacky Wednesday in Mexico, where I'm sending transmission from deep in the hearts of narco territory. Somehow I'm still alive after a decade. Dmitry Medvedev just tweets, Ursula, the wild dame, tweeted on Ukraine losing its 100,000 military for all the world to see. The tweet's been gutted and edited. Clearly, the Washington Obcom called the dame to order and didn't go easy on her. Looks rather humiliating. There's no EU, only the 51st state. Again, this is basic academic history. Nobody talks about this. It's not a conspiracy theory. There's books and academic journals written on how it was the EU was financed. The creation of the EU over the decades was financed by the U.S. State Department and the CIA. The EU was a U.S. imperial project. It was an elite globalist project. So when Medvedev says it's the 51st state, he's correct. Whether you like him or you hate him, information that's accurate is accurate. And another unnerving piece of news comes from Melissa Chen, Spectator contributing editor on her Twitter. It's a clip of Chinese social media users reporting Huawei phones automatically deleting videos of the protests that took place in China without notifying the owners. Melissa comments, not sure if it's from the cloud or device level. She says, our sci-fi movies have not even imagined this level of dystopia. So now you know why I bang on a boot the algorithm ghetto so much, because this is, as I see it, our number one, numero uno threat just coming down the pipe. They can just, on your Amazon Kindles, they can delete knowledge, memory hole, knowledge and books on your phones. They can just reach right in, delete stuff. What can I tell you, folks? But the good news is the UN has deemed French baguettes essential to humanity's culture. Lovers of France's iconic long bread loaf, rejoice! The baguette has now earned special recognition by the UN as an integral part of humanity's cultural heritage. So, you know, one positive news today, and why not? I would agree. It is, you know, a classic, you know, the baguette, the French baguette, it's a classic thing. Here in Mexico, we've got the baguettes. They're copying France. We know that. So, yeah, you know, plus one for France. There you go. Meanwhile, in Germany, police have conducted 91 house searches and interrogations across the homeland today over hate postings on the internet. Press release from the Federal Criminal Police Office in Germany, nationwide day of action against hate postings. The German police will take joint action against the authors of criminal posts of thought crimes on the internet in a nationwide campaign, because requests for crimes, threats, coercion, or incitement to hatred online are crimes that can be punished with up to 5 years in prison. Our free speech is slowly eroding. I mean, it's crazy now. Of course, I think no one should be calling for injury to be done to anyone, you know, illegal stuff. But we've already seen people just from New Zealand to Europe to Canada to U.S., even in Mexico, a governor proposed, if you insult the governor, like if you make a joke, if you say he looks funny, you can go to jail for 36 hours and pay a fine. Samuel Garcia of Nuevo León, who now says he's going to get rid of your cars in the state of Nuevo León as well. And so this is crazy. They're going to people, they're normalizing. If you say, commit a thought crime, you'll have the police
showing up at your house. I mean, it's a slippery slope. They say hatred. They can define what is hatred now. So if you make a joke about whatever group of people, like a joke even, you'll be swatted. So absolutely insane. Germany is just revisiting its history, if you ask me. And look at this one. New York City now to start involuntarily hospitalizing mentally ill homeless people. Yes, there are issues with mentally ill homeless people. They can be dangerous. I've seen it here in Mexico. They smash windows. I've had them even threaten to kill me just openly on the street here in Mexico. But again, slippery slope. What if the government can just say they don't like how you think? Oh, you're mentally ill. Take him away. You see what I'm saying? We always have to be cautious. All right. And a reminder that if you'd like to get a complete list of shows here on TNT and the schedule, just go to tntradio.live. You'll see all of our presenters, our shows, the schedule. We always frequently have new shows coming online, and you'll get the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of incredible and expert commentators separating the truth from the lies and propaganda right here on TNT Radio.
Making sense of the stories.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Science fiction stories containing plot lines that serve as a warning about the dangers of technology, such as those that have been featured on the British anthology television series Black Mirror, must not be very popular in the U.S. I mean, if it was, maybe the city of San Francisco would not have just so carelessly approved the use of what can only be described as killer police robots, ignoring for the moment the aforementioned science fiction stories. What could possibly go wrong? Here to discuss, joining me again, is TNT Radio news producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Rory. This is perfect for a wacky Wednesday. Rex Hopke, a sometimes humorous columnist for USA Today, says, "Great news, everyone. The cops are getting killer robots. Yay. I know when most think of modern day policing, the first thing that comes to mind is, what's another thing we could give them to kill people with? Well, apparently someone in San Francisco said, hey, how about a robot equipped with explosives? And then someone else presumably said, sure, that sounds super neat, and I've definitely never seen a science fiction movie where an idea like that goes horribly wrong. Well, anyways, as reported by the Associated Press, supervisors in San Francisco voted Tuesday to give city police the ability to use potentially lethal remote-controlled robots in quote-unquote emergency situations following an emotionally charged debate that reflected the divisions on the politically liberal board over support for law enforcement. The vote, surprisingly, was 8-3, with the majority agreeing to grant police the option despite strong objections from civil liberties and other police oversight groups. Opponents said the authority would lead to the further militarization of a police force already too aggressive with poor and minority communities. Supervisor Connie Chan, a member of the committee that forwarded the proposal to the full board, said she understood concerns over the use of force, but that, quote, according to state law, we are required to approve the use of these equipments. So here we are, and it's definitely not an easy discussion, end quote. The SFPD said it does not have pre-armed robots and has no plans to arm robots with guns, a decision that our good friend Rex Hupke said, oh, wonderful. That's a great relief, on par with saying, don't worry, I'm not going to give this squirrel I tied a stick of dynamite to access to a cannon. All right. So the department says they could deploy robots equipped with explosive charges, quote, to contact, incapacitate, or disorient violent, armed, or dangerous suspects when lives are at stake. This is according to a statement from police spokesperson Allison Maxey. She said, quote, robots equipped in this manner would only be used in extreme circumstances to save or prevent further loss of innocent lives, end quote. Well, I feel better about that. Supervisors amended the proposal Tuesday to specify that officers could use robots only after using alternative force or de-escalation tactics, are concluding that they would not be able to subdue the suspect through those alternative means. Only a limited number of high-ranking officers could authorize the use of robots as a deadly force option. Well, now that it's an option, how many do they got? Well, as San Francisco police currently have a dozen functioning ground robots that they use to assess bombs or provide eyes in low visibility situations. They were acquired between 2010 and 2017, and not once have they been used to deliver an explosive device. Well, of course. But explicit authorization was required after a new California law went into effect this year, requiring police and sheriff's departments to inventory military-grade equipment and seek approval for their use. The state law was authored last year by San Francisco City Attorney David Chu while he was an assembly member. It was aimed at giving the public a forum and voice in the acquisition and use of military-grade weapons that have a negative effect on communities, according to the legislation. Yeah. So the debate, it ran for more than 2 hours, not nearly long enough in my opinion, with members on both sides accusing the other of reckless fear-mongering. Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, who voted in favor of the policy authorization, said he was troubled by rhetoric painting the police department as untrustworthy and dangerous. Board President Shaman Walton, who voted against the proposal, pushed back, saying it made him not anti-police, but pro-people of color. A lot of back and forth going on. So the San Francisco Public Defender's Office sent a letter Monday to the board saying that granting police the ability to kill community members remotely goes against the city's progressive values. The office wanted the board to reinstate language barring police from using robots against any person in an act of force. On the other side of the bay, the Oakland Police Department has actually dropped a similar proposal after a great deal of public backlash. Not so much here with the SFPD. And I will remind listeners that the first time ever that a robot was used to deliver explosives in the United States was back in 2016 when Dallas police sent in an armed robot that killed a hold-up sniper who had shot and killed five officers during an ambush. And now here we are in the year 2022 living the science fiction dream, I mean nightmare. Man, do you think this is a good idea, Harvori?
No way. I mean, it's like RoboCop. They told us what would happen. And I mean, at least RoboCop was part man, part machine. And here it's like they're removing the human aspect and going full blown. I think it's called lethal autonomous weapons. I can't find the clip or the name of it. Someone made some years ago a very sort of entertaining, exaggerated version of what might happen with these laws. And it was, you know, a mock presentation being given by a defense industry expert. And then these things going out of control, like flying into a university classroom and just these killer drones killing all of the students. You know, I kind of don't doubt that at some point, I hope it doesn't happen, but given that, you know, all technologies in history, you know, the atomic bomb has been used unnecessarily, if you ask me, in Japan. They didn't have to drop it and kill all those people. And so there's just, this goes beyond though, because we all have experience with the technology, software, computers, and how many things go wrong, get hacked. It doesn't even have to get hacked, you know, the blue screen of death. What if one of these things, something's wrong and it just goes off on its own, you know, and starts killing people? Or maybe a bad cop who just gets angry and goes nuts and programs the robot to kill. Black Mirror. I mean, it's Black Mirror all the way. It's not a pretty future, Ruckus.
It's really interesting you brought up that demonstration or that video. I saw that years ago, and you know, I found that whatever that was specifically, but I've seen that, and that was more frightening to me than any fictional television show I'd ever seen. It was the flying drones, and they had like a little explosive cartridge, like a shotgun shell or something, and they would attach to the people's foreheads and then blow their brains out. Those are the ones, right? if I'm not mistaken. Very frightening stuff. But this is, yeah, we should definitely not. I thought the point of science fiction, a vast majority of it, is that it serves as a warning to people that, hey, this is what could possibly go wrong, and this is the type of things that we might want to consider, and they are some seriously deep subjects, things that have been tackled in the realm of fantasy, science fiction, and whatnot for decades, if not centuries. Some of the things that we're just rushing into, like we warp-speeded the mRNA technology. That probably wasn't a smart idea. And here, after a two-hour-long debate, we're just going to go ahead and say, yeah, let's do this. This could be our Skynet moment. You made reference to RoboCop, but I think more of Terminator, because those are all machines. And in that case, Skynet became sentient, the AI. And I immediately think of that Blake Lemoine gentleman, the Google AI engineer who was talking to the Google AI and was convinced that it was sentient and talking back and had feelings. And then Google fired him all mysteriously. So, I mean, I don't like how all of these different things, when put together, make a giant jigsaw puzzle that spells the end of you and I and everybody listening. So I'm not on board. And if I was in that room, I definitely would have voted no.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And I use that analogy the most, Skynet. It's becoming self-aware. Indeed, it really is. And also the other problem of laws, national laws, international laws, how to deal with these killer robots. We're seeing them. I follow this closely on my podcast, the development of these military weapons. We've got these kamikaze drones now. They're small, they're cheap. It's like they let them loose, and the mother drone has got a bunch of small drones. They've got autonomous sort of like tanks. They just flew for the first time an autonomous Black Hawk helicopter recently. So all of this stuff is coming online in the war, you know, in a war. They have to create laws for all of this stuff. You know, if something goes wrong, was it the robot? Was it the soldier? Was it the government? Yeah, it's really uncharted territory. Thanks, Ruckus. We'll get back to you tomorrow, and we'll be right back after this break.
TNT Radio's Jesse Zurawell.
G20 Bali Leaders Declaration. It's chock full of declarations about injection passports, central bank digital currencies, sustainable development, all of the globalists' favorite agendas or key agendas.
He was the one who actually, in a public context, said, why aren't we cooperating together to institute a universal passport of some sort in which all of our key data would be on this program that would actually then everyone who would be flying around the world would have to actually have in order to gain access to our various societies. So again, the initiator of what became, I think it was number 23 in this long list of programs that the G20 mm-hmm. countries unleashed, amongst the many other things which are also very suspicious, and they all collaborate and work together in some important ways, from how we're going to manage moving forward our deindustrialization, our use of alternative energy resources, controlling and influencing the supply of food to the world. And then we have these regulations that we have been worried about all this time. And nothing is, I just get the sense that nobody gives a damn.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
A cashless society means zero cash. No car boot sales. No markets. No tooth fairy or piggy banks. No saving cash for a rainy day. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And I'm joined by Robert Billet, who's got a lengthy bio real quick. He's a partner in the Cincinnati and Northern Connecticut, Kentucky offices of the law firm Taft, Stettinius, and Hollister, where he's practiced in the environmental and litigation practice groups for over 32 years. He's handled and led some of the most novel and complex cases in the country involving damage from exposure to per and poly fluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, including the first individual class action mass tort and multi-district litigation proceedings involving PFAS, recovering over $1 billion for clients impacted by the chemicals. In 2017, he received the Right Livelihood Award, known as the Alternative Nobel Prize, for his work on behalf of those injured by PFAS chemical contamination. He's the author of the must-read book, Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. I've got the book on Kindle, highly recommend it. And his story is the inspiration for the 2019 motion picture Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo as himself. And his work is also featured in the documentary The Devil We Know. He's frequently giving lectures and talks. You can find him on Twitter at Robert Billett. That's B-I-L-O-T-T. Welcome to TNT Radio, Mr. Billett.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. And again, I highly recommend people check out the book. I'm about halfway through and it is riveting. I can see why it was made into a movie. And maybe just to start, you know, would you say your work that led to the book, the documentary and the film, that's sort of the culmination or apex or highlight of everything that you've been doing for the past couple decades?
Yeah, it really tells the story of what I've been working on. Gosh, it's almost 24 years now. I've been practicing law 32 years, and 24 of those have been spent really on this issue of uncovering what this whole class of chemicals, the chemicals you mentioned called PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, these completely man-made chemicals that are now contaminating virtually the entire planet. And so the book and the documentary and the film really kind of chronicle how we found out that these chemicals even existed and how long it took really to bring that story out to the rest of the world. And I'm continuing to work on those issues to this day.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you about that later because the saga continues. You know, maybe eventually you'll write a sequel, but maybe to get into the book, you know, over the years, I've been a big fan of people doing your sort of work. You know, we all know Aaron Brockovich. I like Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s work going against big pharma, all the bigs, right? Big agra, big oil, and we're swimming in toxicity, as your book details. You know, just one of the many threats. You know, there's GMOs, glyphosate. You deal with PFAS and stuff like that, and you know, speaking of swimming, your book starts out with the poisoned water, the dry run stream, and from the landfill, which was destroying the landscape, the environment, the animals, and even harming the people. And you know, as people get into the book, it's going into the bloodstream of I think it's now you're dealing with millions, if I'm not mistaken, people in your latest class action lawsuit. So if you could tell us a bit about, you know, the exposure story.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, you mentioned Bobby Kennedy Jr. He and his firm are actually part of our counsel team working on these issues. You know, it's been really a remarkable journey trying to understand what these chemicals are, and you know, what they can do to us and where they are, you know, when what kinds of products and how are they getting out into the world? Because unfortunately, you know, these are chemicals that were invented really after right around the time of World War II, completely man-made chemicals that never existed on the planet prior to that point in time. But over the last, you know, 70, 80 years since that time frame have been pushed out into so many products, stain-resistant, waterproof materials, fast food wrappers and packaging, computer chips, firefighting foam, Scotchgard, Teflon, I mean, you name it, that these chemicals have managed to get into so many products and in so many locations worldwide that they've gotten out into the air, the water, the soil, plants. And unfortunately, when these chemicals get out into the world, they stay there. You know, that's why you hear these referred to now. If you jump online or you see references in the newspaper or in TV to forever chemicals, that's what we're talking about, this group of PFAS chemicals. Because, you know, the ones that I was dealing with, the ones that have this unique chemical structure of 8 carbons attached to fluorine, they call them C8s. PFOA and PFOS are the two best known. Those chemicals, when they get out into the world from these various products and manufacturing operations, they virtually never break down. They'll be out there for thousands, if not millions of years. They don't break down under natural conditions. So they stay there and they stay in the soil, they stay in the water. And unfortunately, they have this really bad tendency of getting into living things and getting into the blood, including people. And in fact, as you pointed out, right now, I think the latest surveys have shown that these chemicals are being found in the blood of, approximately 99% of the population worldwide. And even children are born pre-polluted with these chemicals because it's passed from the mother to the child. And, not only are these things out there and widespread and staying in the environment, but the more we learn about it, the more troubling is the information about their potential effects on human health. And so what we've been seeing as this information's finally made its way out to the public are regulatory agencies, scientists recommending, even lower and lower and lower acceptable levels for exposure to these chemicals. I say the story's finally coming out because, yes, these were invented back in the 40s and have been in use in all these products, but what was known about them, their toxicity, persistence, cancer-causing ability, all of that was known by the companies making the chemicals, but unfortunately, that wasn't shared with the rest of us. That information was covered up and withheld, and that's part of the story is how in the world could information about chemicals that are so widely used be covered up and kept from the regulators, from scientists, and from the public for so long, so that when we finally do find out what's going on, the entire planet's been contaminated. So it's a really disturbing story, and one that I thought was really important to bring out to as many people as possible because of the public health implications and what we're dealing with now.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I have scientists and doctors on from time to time to talk about these issues, the toxicity, and I live in the second biggest city in Mexico, Guadalajara, and I can sense all around me the toxicity. When I close my home and I run the air cleaner filter, I feel fine. But when I leave the window and doors open, I start sneezing. Like there's, plants, factories around, and I live next to the Mexican airbase. And, there's many of the stuff you talk about. I don't doubt that all around us, there are all these toxic chemicals that they just continue to use and pollute, the environment and the population. We got to jump to a quick news break. We'll be right back.
We're ready.
News. The news
is our business, and we never close.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. People in China's southern manufacturing hub of Guangzhou clashed with white hazmat-suited riot police on Tuesday night as frustration with stringent COVID-19 rules 3 years into the pandemic boiled over. Australia saw a drop in inflation in October, which provided some relief to the economy. However, the Treasurer warned that the risk of high inflation was still there. The Dutch government plans to shut down up to 3,000 farms to meet EU green goals.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Robert Billet. He's the author of Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. I highly recommend the book. It was also made into a film, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo, the Hulk. And do find Robert on Twitter, at Robert Billet. And you had a Paul on the road to Damascus moment reading your book, from defending DuPont to going against them. You talk about at some point it was an all or nothing gamble on your part. And these are the stories that I like to hear, the David Goliath and people fighting the good fight, having courage and bravery. Could you tell us a bit about that struggle to turn away from the dark side and fight the good fight?
Yeah, you know, I started my legal career back in 1990, and when I joined the Taft Law Firm in Cincinnati, you know, a lot of what I was doing for the first 8 years of my career was really kind of learning the whole system of really complex state and federal and international laws, rules, regulations, all the different statutes, the alphabet soup of different federal laws that, that dealt with the environment, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Superfund, hazardous substance laws, all of that. And really a lot of what I was doing at, during that time was helping our clients try to navigate that world. And a lot of the clients I was dealing with were big companies. Chemical companies, a lot of them. We never represented DuPont, but you know, we dealt with a lot of companies like DuPont. And so when you know when I was first approached by a farmer out in West Virginia who was trying to figure out why his cows were dying, and he thought it might have something to do with chemicals coming out of a landfill owned by DuPont near his property. You know, I agreed to take that case on initially thinking it would be pretty straightforward. After all, you know, this is the kind of thing I helped our chemical company clients do, was to get permits to run landfills and to emit things. And I knew DuPont, even though we didn't represent them, I knew a lot of their lawyers from different work we did and thought, you know, we would probably be able to get to the bottom of it pretty quickly. But it wasn't until I started digging in to the documents about that landfill and started to uncover what was really going on there, that there was this completely unregulated chemical in the landfill seeping into the water, coming out into a creek that the farmers' cows were drinking from, and then realizing, you know, it went far beyond the creek, that I started to really realize there was something really, really bad going on here. And it's not the kind of thing that I'd ever dealt with our other clients. And, you know, just a really kind of unusual situation of massive contamination being actively covered up. And it took a long time for me to really believe what I was seeing and really, really comprehend that this was happening. You know, we agreed that once we figured out what was happening, this was a public health threat. And we had an obligation to help our client, the farmer, get to the bottom of it. And if that involved taking on DuPont, and you know, pursuing litigation for years in order to do it, that's what we did. And, you know, I don't know how many other law firms would have made that decision, but I was fortunate to be at a firm that saw the need to do it, and happy to say I'm still there, you know, 32 years later.
And in your book, I mean, some of that history is fascinating. You write, quote, as World War II was ending, DuPont bought a swath of bottomland that had originally been awarded to George Washington following the Revolution. It was south of town on the eastern bank of the Ohio River, a fine place to build a new plastics plant. And DuPont quickly became the economic wellspring of the town. And, you know, I'm not anti-big corporations just because they're big or monopolies. I've worked at the top private and probably biggest education system in Mexico, the Tec de Monterrey, which has 30 plus campuses. And you know, there are big businesses that do good. In your book, you detail how the townspeople lived off of, you know, DuPont and all of these jobs and all this economic positives. And I mean, even in some of these chemicals, I wonder, you know, how do we weigh the cost benefit? And, you know, what thoughts do you have on big corporations and some of the good and some of the bad that they do? How do you sort of weigh those two?
Yeah, you know, that's definitely one of the themes I wanted to explore in the book. And I think they tried to also do, and I think they did a great job in the film Dark Waters and in the documentary, The Devil We Know, really showing, you know, how difficult this is. I mean, you've got a large company that's comes into a small town where folks really need those jobs and are very loyal to the company because of that. And, you know, and are hesitant to believing that something like this could be happening, you know, that the company could be knowingly poisoning them for decades. And are very resistant to those who suggest it might be happening. And so it's a difficult thing to overcome. I think it's definitely something though that is why it's important to have these stories come out and to have these films and books and things be made so that people can see, you know, that it's not an easy thing to deal with a situation like this. If you're living in that town, if you've got family members that are working for these companies, it's a very difficult situation. And it helps explain how something like this can continue and go on for decades before things really start to change.
And what you just said, you know, it reminded me of my parents. They came to the U.S. from Yugoslavia, from Croatia in the 80s with nothing, not speaking English. And they, have a successful middle-class lifestyle. And just what you described, whenever I criticize America in a good way, right, my parents just, they don't want to hear any criticism of America. They're very resistant to it because it's like it gave them everything, just like these workers in these towns when it comes to DuPont and whatnot. And also in your book, we see the complicity of the government agencies and private corporations working together, EPA and DuPont. Many people for many years have talked about these revolving doors, right, where you'll have some functionary in a regulatory body retire or leave and then go work for the private corporations. And some past guests I've had on, academics, economists, and businessmen have, you know, said that in some ways America has economic fascism. And so your sort of thoughts on the corrupt relationships between government agencies, are, you know, supposed watchdogs and corporations?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a concept you may hear referred to as corporate capture as well, you know, where you've got a very large company or industry that is got a close relationship with the agencies that are supposed to be regulating them. And we see that here. We saw that in this story where, the company had very close ties to the state Environmental Protection Agency. In fact, some of the lawyers that had actually been working for DuPont on this matter at a private law firm, it's almost like the reverse revolving door. They, after negotiating a deal between the company and the state, they actually then left the law firm and became the heads of the state's EPA, the head of the air division, the water division, and the legal division, and the head of the entire agency. The agency that was then enforcing the very deal they had negotiated. And then we see that at the federal level as well. You'll see some interviews in the documentary, The Devil We Know, with a former U.S. EPA official who left the agency, became a consultant to DuPont, and then helped them negotiate a deal with the agency, where the agency eventually backed off on regulating these chemicals some 15 years ago, when the agency was getting ready to crack down on it, which resulted in, you know, exposures continuing and the contamination continuing another 15 years. So it's frustrating to watch that. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you've got this sort of balancing going on between concerns about the economy. And, you know, here you've got chemicals right now that have been, there have been recent papers calculating what the cost to the overall U.S. economy has been from healthcare impacts, from exposure to these chemicals. And, you know, these papers are calculating costs in the tens of billions of dollars in healthcare. Recent paper was actually looking at how many deaths could be attributable to these chemicals since 1999. You know, it was calculating millions of deaths in the U.S. related to these chemicals, even more than COVID. And these are the same chemicals now that, as I mentioned, you know, being found in the drinking water, being found in blood. And one of the health concerns that's been most recently linked to these chemicals is the potential to impair our immune system and even possibly decrease the effectiveness of vaccines. I mean, at a time when we're dealing with COVID and pandemics. So, you know, that the you've got to do a balancing here. And that's what's happening right now on Capitol Hill as we have debates about what should be done about these chemicals. You have certain parties that are arguing that these chemicals are indispensable to so many sectors of the U.S. economy and so many jobs depend upon them, that there would be huge economic impacts. But then you have others that are pointing out, yes, but what about public health and the impacts to U.S. society from the massive health impacts from these chemicals? And so that's a really important policy debate that's going on right now across this country and at the federal level and in every state house that's debating what do we do about these chemicals, because they're so widespread and they're affecting so many different aspects of our economy. And what do we prioritize? You know, public health, economic growth, and you know, how should that be done? So it's an incredibly important issue.
All right, we're going to have to jump to our break. And while we go to break, you can check out the book on Amazon and wherever books are sold, Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. Check out the film, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo, as well as The Devil We Know, the feature-length documentary, and follow Robert on Twitter at Robert Billott, B-I-L-O-T-T. We'll be right back on TNT.
I try to avoid the headlong rush into full-throated support or criticism of someone. The former is how you get your heart broken, and the latter is how you can destroy your own credibility. It's not wishy-washy to take a wait-and-see attitude and to compliment the good, criticize the bad. Still haven't made up my mind about Elon Musk, but I'm telling you, the longer time goes on, the more I like what I see. He tweeted yesterday, "This is a battle for the future of civilization. If free speech is lost, even in America, tyranny is all that lies ahead." He's absolutely correct, and Elon has been a staunch supporter of free speech, which is why the left has lost their ever-loving minds, even going so far as buying a car from a company started by Nazis to protest Twitter being Nazi or something. They're also going crazy over him having a pistol on his nightstand. I, on the other hand, was more concerned by the four cans of caffeine-free Diet Coke. Elon, baby, that stuff will kill you. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
One day, my 8-year-old son, Michael, was playing football with his friends in the mud and got an infection that led to sepsis.
Sepsis is your body's toxic response to an infection that can lead to tissue damage to extremities.
They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more, go to sepsis.org.
TNTRadio.live.
I just kind of stream it online.
Yeah, online.
Listen online every day.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back on our final segment with Rob Billott, author of Exposure. Check out the book. It's highly recommended. I've got a copy in the film Dark Waters, as well as The Devil We Know. And Robert, was your life ever in danger at any point doing what you were doing?
You know, I don't know. You know, if those that have seen the film Dark Waters, you know, there's a scene. I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it, but there's a scene in a parking garage. I'll leave it at that, where I'm a little nervous. And that really was based on one point in time. And I had recalled this vividly, where I had just taken the deposition of the CEO of DuPont in their corporate offices in Wilmington, Delaware. And I had spent the deposition showing this gentleman all of the internal studies that his company had done that showed the toxic effects of this chemical, yet the company was denying that they existed. So I had spent the entire day showing him these documents so that the company could no longer say they didn't know about them. And I don't think folks were too happy with me based on that deposition. And I was walking back to my car that day, and in an empty parking garage in the dark. And then it kind of hit me. To a conversation I had had the night before with my parents, who were asking me where I was. And I said I was at the DuPont Hotel, and they started saying, "Well, who knows all of this? And what would happen if you just disappeared?" So those thoughts were going through my head. And so there were times when I was concerned about it. But, you know, I think, again, getting this information out, getting this story out, I think was critically important, because then it doesn't matter who's here, who isn't here. The story's out.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm thankful nothing happened to you. About 2 years ago, 2020, I interviewed Dr. Robert Epstein, who was at some point America's top psychologist. He was on my podcast. And he, I mean, he relates the story how he was investigating how Google manipulates elections. And attorney generals, I think in the summer of 2019, joked to him that you better be careful, you might die in a car crash. And 6 months later, December, I think, 2019, his wife dies in a car crash. And, you know, he's commented it's possible that whatever dark forces, whether it was Google or the government, possibly were sending him a message. So this stuff definitely goes on. And the movie, I haven't seen it because I haven't had time generally to watch movies in years. And I'm living abroad in Kazakhstan, Mexico. I catch less news of the latest films, but I'm going to watch Dark Waters. And what was it like to have a film made about your work? Was it, you know, was it also a sigh of relief, vindication, and just, you know, what's that feeling been like seeing the film made?
Well, that was quite an experience. I mean, really kind of surreal to have, you know, a film being made, and most of it was filmed here in Cincinnati in our law offices. I got to consult on it and help them you know, with the script and other parts of it. And, you know, just really a fantastic group. You know, Mark Ruffalo had reached out to me after an article appeared in the New York Times magazine back in 2016 that really kind of laid this story out, really kind of one of the first ones to do so, and had been stunned when he read it, saying, you know, why is this in the New York Times magazine? Why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times? And why have I not heard of this? And how do we make sure that people know this is happening? And how do we bring this story out? And he teamed up with the folks at Participant Media, and they just, I think, did a fantastic job in taking a pretty complicated story, you know, that involves a lot of science and a lot of legal issues and chemicals most people can't even pronounce, and was able to really put it together in a 2-hour film that conveys, you know, the essence of what happened. And they stuck to the truth and the facts, and some of the real people are in the film in cameos as well. And but watching that process was fascinating, just to see, you know, the talents of screenwriters and people that are able to take a story like this and put it together in a way that really reaches a wide group of people who can then understand why this matters and why this story affects all of us.
At the start of your book, you quote farmer Wilbur Earl Tennant, quote, "They want to try and keep everything hushed up like it's some kind of big secret. They won't tell us what it is. They don't want to talk to me because I'm an old dumb farmer. I'm not supposed to know anything, but it's not going to be covered up because I'm going to bring it out in the open for people to see," end quote. And in your book, you also at one point write, quote, "I didn't realize it at the time, but sending this letter," I believe it was to the federal agencies in DuPont, "would mark my first time acting not only as a lawyer on a case, but also as a concerned citizen who felt a civic duty to try to warn the public about PFOA. This single step would change the trajectory of my life," end quote. And so I'm a former history teacher, history professor, and I just love speaking truth to power. I feel not enough people do it. We need more people to do this sort of thing. And, you know, just your thoughts on speaking truth to power and perhaps encouraging people to, regardless of the consequences, you know, fight for what is right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the reasons I've spent as much time as I do now talking with college students or law students and people of different community groups to try to help people understand what I think is one of the critical points of this whole story, is that a single individual, somebody like Mr. Tennant, the farmer who was trying to find out what was happening to his cows, somebody saying, you know, "I'm going to stand up, speak out, and take action," that has consequences. That actually can result in real meaningful change. It might take a long time, might be difficult, but it can happen, and it's worth it to do it. You know, you see in this story, you know, Mr. Tenet standing up to what was, you know, one of the world's largest companies at the time. He ended up taking on not only one of the biggest companies, but the whole regulatory system in the U.S., the legal system in the U.S., the way our science is generated. And then when his neighbor, Mr. Kiger, and his wife and his neighbors come together and the community comes together to bring a class action, you know, they had to stand up against their own neighbors and fellow people in the community. But in the end, you know, it was worth it to take that risk and to stand up because what we see now, what is happening now, the story has come out. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to begin the book with his quote. You know, that the truth was going to come out. They didn't think that, you know, a farmer would make a difference, but he did. And that now that this story is out, we're seeing the laws change. We're seeing people now talking about needing to revamp the whole way we address chemicals, not only in the United States, but worldwide. So, you know, the actions of a single individual are meaningful, and it is worth it to stand up, take that risk, and to speak out. It can change the world.
Yeah, I spent about a decade teaching. Just by now, I think it had been over 1,000 students, and I was trying to get that message across as well. Fight corruption, fight for truth. Wherever you are, just, you know, don't give up, because, you know, here in Mexico, for example, everywhere, but it's well known there's a lot of corruption in the government, and we can't let it run over us. It's like you're fighting a wave. You'll never defeat it, but you could make life less worse. If you don't do anything, the corruption is just going to spread, and we'll just see horrible consequences, as you know, whether it's the chemicals you're dealing with, or, I mean, here in Jalisco where I live, they open cases on hundreds of policemen who are involved in kidnapping people. So you get what I'm saying? We have to fight the tide of these things. We got a couple
Absolutely.
Minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, you've got to be willing to take that risk. You can't just assume, well, it's always been done this way, so it can't possibly be changed. It can be changed. Things can change. And I think this story is a great example of how that can happen.
We got a couple minutes left. If you have any final thoughts, and maybe on these, you know, big corporations, I think the size and power of many corporations and transnationals is getting out of hand. I like the idea of anti-trust, but you know, your thoughts. I mean, they say some of these corporations have now more power than nation states, and so, you know, any thoughts on how to deal with them?
Well, yeah, but bringing these stories out can impact that. For example, in this case, you know, once this story finally started coming out and we actually got to the point of presenting the story in front of juries in trials, DuPont, which had been around, you know, since the Revolutionary War, spun off its entire Teflon business into a new company called Chemours. And then what was left of DuPont merged with Dow Chemical and then split into three new companies. So DuPont itself started to disappear because of what was going on here in this case. And you know, that's now an issue of trying to make sure they don't escape their responsibility by moving their money and moving the assets around. So, you know, these big companies can start undertaking huge change in response to things like this.
We're now less than 2 minutes to midnight. If you got any final thoughts, and if you want to tell us again any of your latest projects, you know, where people can find you, support your work, and so forth.
Yeah, you know, right now we're bringing a new case where we're trying to represent everybody that's had these chemicals in their blood as a new class action to try to make sure that whatever studies need to be done to tell us exactly what these chemicals are doing to us, that that the funding is available, that the companies have to pay for that funding if they're going to bring these new chemicals out onto the market. They don't get to do all the studies, but they have to pay for them. And we just got that certified to proceed as a class action on behalf of everyone, at least in the state of Ohio, so about 10 million people. And it may be expanded depending upon how certain appeals and things go, but we're continuing to fight the fight here to make sure that the people that contaminated this planet with these chemicals are the ones responsible at the end, not all of us for cleaning up this mess.
Well, I thank you for having done what you've done, what you're doing, for taking the time to speak with us. And I encourage you to keep talking to anyone you can, to shows, to students, planting those seeds. I've been mispronouncing your name, I think, Robert Bilott. Again, people, check out the book Exposure, Poison, Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. I highly recommend it. The film Dark Waters and documentary Devil We Know. Find Robert on Twitter at Robert Bilott. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I'm signing off, but keep on listening here on TNT Radio.